Hey, everybody, and welcome to the NFL Roadshow as we turn the page to week three with a preview of Thursday night's game with one of the people who will be there to analyze it, Andrew Whitworth, in his first year as a broadcaster, joining me today. And we'll talk about the Browns-Steelers matchup a little bit. And I should point out now, we had our conversation before Myles Garrett showed up on the injury report Tuesday with a neck injury. Did not end up practicing on that day, so we'll see if he's able to go. Even if he can't, though, I think Andrew's thoughts on the challenges that he presents for an offensive line and an offense in general are definitely worth listening to for future games. I think you'll also be interested to hear his thoughts on the Eagles, who looked amazing on Monday night against a Vikings squad that I really liked coming out of week one. Frankly, I thought they were going to win on Monday night. Looking kind of stupid now. We talked a lot this offseason here on this show, actually, about the ways that A.J. Brown was going to change things for Jalen Hurts and help him take that next step in his development. And we saw those ways play out on Monday. A glimpse at a passing chart from that night, side by side with a passing chart from last season for Jalen Hurts. It's crazy how different it is already. Not a lot of throws to the left last year, even fewer over the middle. Monday, he peppered the left side with throws, and he finished with more targets and completions over the middle than he did to the right. That is his faith in AJ in an area where he is very good, unlocking both him and the offense, and it was fun to watch. He was also fun to watch on the ground. The ways in which he is a weapon there to make this offense, I think, pretty scary moving forward. But again, it's the steps forward in the passing game that we all wanted to see this year. And the fact that he is the highest graded passer in the NFL so far, according to PFF, with a 90.8 grade, I think that says a lot. And obviously, the Bills made quite a statement too against a team that's just a year removed from being the one seed in the AFC. Buffalo has a plus 55 point differential so far. They are the only team in the top 10 in offense, defense, and special teams in Football Outsiders DVOA index. And over at Caesars Sportsbook, they have over 2.5 times more money on them to win the Super Bowl than any other team does. And they're playing in the game of the week this week, as far as I'm concerned, against the Dolphins in the early window. It is the highest expected point total of the week at 54. Lowest point total of the week is the one that's going to kick off the week. Browns Steelers, it's set at 37.5 points, with the Browns favored by 3.5 points as of Tuesday afternoon. As we learned last week, though, with the Browns Jets game, a low expected point total doesn't always mean a low point total, period. That game was expected to be like 38.5 points, I think, and we saw 61 points total in that one. As for this one, we're going to see Andrew Whitworth at the desk for Amazon Prime, the 16-year NFL veteran left tackle who went out on top with the Super Bowl for the Rams, is now tackling the art of broadcasting for Thursday Night Football. I've got lots of offensive line-related questions for him, and he's got some seriously entertaining answers. So let's break the huddle.
Hurry up, let's go!
2-1, 2-1, 2. Ready? Ready.
Hi, Andrew. Welcome to the dark side of the media. How's it going for you so far?
It's been fun. It's something different. I'm the rookie now. You know, I've been the old guy for so long. I get to be the youngster now. So I got all the rookie duties and all that good stuff. Lots to learn.
You've been coaching up people for the last few years, like unloading all of your knowledge. And now you're in that position, huh?
That's right. You know, I'm learning something different every week. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. I think for me at the end of my career, it's like I may study the rusher I'm going against and a little bit about the defense, but I've played them all so much. I kind of know, you know, the coverages and rotations and all that stuff. So there's not a lot of new stuff going on. But now to kind of, hey, see the whole picture and look at the entire picture every week and, you know, everything from special teams, offense, defense, and then the big picture of really where the teams are at. I think it's a lot of fun. It's something invigorating and new and different. And so I've enjoyed it.
I feel like we need more offensive linemen in the media for a bunch of reasons. One is just which that's like to analyze the trenches in a way that is smart you're unloading in. First of all, you're starting at like square one for most fans, right? Like these are not things that they're looking for. Like you can make the fans smarter really quickly by pointing certain things out before a game, but also it's such a big part of the game. And it's one that we don't have a lot of people pointing us in that direction.
Yeah. You imagine like we're the closest thing to quarterbacks offensively, right? You need to understand how coverage and really the rotations of defenses and blitzes and everything else work to understand who to pick up. And then you also have to have a big grasp of really offensive strategy and what the philosophy is of your team and how you're going to play. So, you know, from all the positions on the field, it's one of those that really, I would say, you know, if you think about it, it's quarterback, probably secondary, that has to have a big understanding of the big picture, and the offensive line is probably number two, and secondary is probably number three. So they have a great understanding of the game. I mean, you really do. I think now you live in a new generation, though, where, you know, the skill players, a lot of people that have a big name necessarily were always probably the only people that were a media option. But now I think people want more and more information, and they want more opportunities to understand the game. And I think offensive linemen have a great opportunity to be able to do that.
Yeah, I think fans are getting smarter too. And so you can't just throw the low hanging fruit at them and have them feel fulfilled at all. From a self-scouting standpoint, what are the things that have stood out to you about this transition into media, like where your strengths are, what your weaknesses are? Sean Payton talked about how like the weirdest thing for him was that they went to put the IFB in the other ear from where his headset was on the field. And he was like, totally threw me. Like, what's happening? That's not my ear that I listen. Like, you know, it's just a full-on introduction to a bunch of different things.
It really is. I mean, I think there's things that you really didn't think about. I think I've been so impressed with really what goes on behind the scenes, the production, the things that you're talking about and discussing that you're trying to get across, and how many things go into people like a Carissa Thompson, who's hosting a show that they have to understand and be right on beat with and par with the understanding of what the philosophy of the show is. I mean, it's so amazing to watch some of that and realize really what all goes into that and how sharp they have to be. I've really been impressed with it. I think for me, it's a little different too, because I've probably in my 16 years being a captain and an offensive lineman, for the majority of my career being a captain, I kind of always felt, especially when I was in Cincinnati, that, you know, we had a lot of arrest. We had a lot of things just culture-wise that weren't very good when I first got there. I thought it was so important for me to be very even-keeled and just, you know, kind of not going, no ups and downs. You're just very level all the time. And so I think sometimes, you know, my perception and ability might be to be quiet and to not always share my opinion all the time. But I think that was more about really trying to make sure that guys had nothing to go off of other than just, hey, he's always going to be steady for us. He's going to be kind of a rock for us from a culture standpoint, being a captain, and more helping them through their emotions of ups and downs they're going through. And now in the media, it's fun. I get a chance to be myself and actually be my personality. There's nobody that's like, oh man, I can't say this because this guy, you know, maybe he's going to say something different next week if I act this certain way in the media. I'm not obligated to the team anymore. So now I get to have fun, be myself. And I think that part's been easy. I like to have a good time. I love to talk about football. I'm very passionate about the game. So I look forward to the opportunity to continue to be in the media space on the dark side, as you call it. You know, it's going to be a lot of fun. I've enjoyed it already.
You are, though, very close to the game still in terms of having relationships with a lot of the people that are in it. So that can be kind of a balancing act. How are you feeling about being in a position to analyze publicly your peers?
I think I've always looked at it this way. I think a lot of people talk about it and use the word. I think when I sat through all my meetings with different networks, it's like, can you be critical? Mm-hmm. You know, that was always the word, right? And so to me, it's not about critical. Being a leader of a team and an organization, as I've always been my whole career, it's about being willing to challenge and being willing to call out things that aren't good football, that aren't good culture, that aren't good things that are going to help you be successful. So to me, I don't look at it as being critical as much as I think the most important thing you can do in this space, I know the people that I've enjoyed to watch are people who are just themselves and they call it how they see it and what they believe. And I think being, you know, consistent in what I see and believe is right and what I see and believe is good football or good for the game, I'm going to continue to do my best to make sure I talk about it and point it out and things that aren't share my honest opinion. And I think that to me, I look at it as less about being critical and more about, I think the people I have relationships with and that I value in this league, they get it. And they probably feel that exact same way. So I think it's more about being able to articulate you know, the way I see it and the way they probably see it too. And they won't feel anything other than challenged probably. And I think it's something I'd tell them to their face. So it's not really something I'm that worried about. I think just being myself is number one.
What do you see when you watch the Rams tape so far?
You know, I think you really look at it, two different teams, week one to week two. You know, you look offensively is a much different style. They came out week one and it kind of seemed like they were going to try and keep up with Buffalo on offense. I think if you really looked at that game in totality, it was like, hey, we're going to try and, you know, be as explosive too. And really kind of, it looked like Buffalo's D-line, you know, really came to play and kind of gave them some problems early and maybe sped Matthew up a little bit, gave the O-line some trouble. You got new guys all over the place. And then they had some injuries too. Some guys got banged up in the game. And then you come out this week and they kind of new O-line shuffled around a little bit. And you got a receiver in the backfield in the I formation and they're running some ISOs. And I thought it was 2006 all over again. I thought ISO lead was coming back to the NFL. So it was awesome. It was good to see, like you could tell there was an intention to be physical, really to, hey, we're going to help our line out. We're going to run some play actions. We're going to get under center. We're going to do some things to create that physical mentality and then throw the ball off of that. And then as the game goes and we warm up, you know, we'll add some, sprinkle in some of the things that we've done. And I think you saw that from them. And I thought it was, you know, just another great job of Sean McVay. He always finds a way to make his team play their best. And I think that's one of the things to me that's really special about him is he's always kind of found a way of, hey, we don't have this guy or maybe this person's hurt, but what can we do to be successful? And I think you saw that this past week with Atlanta.
You talked about the injuries on the offensive line and the fact that there are new guys out there in the first place. Larry Jackson came in and played relatively well after not getting a single rep in practice at guard during the week after Tremaine Ingram went out with a season-ending ankle injury. Only one player in that last game allowed a pressure after allowing 23 pressures as a team in week one. They gave up two in week two. I'm sure that part of that was matchup related. Was there anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I think really you look at Larry Jackson, he was kind of a guy that I thought at some point is going to get a chance to play in this group. I've always been a huge fan of his. There's a reason he probably wears the number 77. I've been pushing him a little bit to get in there. And so I was happy to see him get in there. I mean, Grady Jarrett's an unbelievable football player, and he got in there to a tremendous job in the game with him. And he's a big human being. And so he's going to do well in there as a guard. I mean, it's probably more the guards that I probably played with when I first got in the league. There were a lot bigger guys, and Alaric's that way. He's a big guy who's going to eat up a lot of space and can really play inside or outside. So I thought it was a great job. But, you know, you look at this Atlanta group, they had a lot of success in week one against the Saints. I mean, they got a lot of pressure. We're all over the quarterback a lot in that game. So, you know, I know people kind of look at it as it's the Atlanta Falcons. They haven't been as good, but they really showed in week one that they were a team that could put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. So I thought it was a great job by them of responding. And to me, in this league, that's what it's really about. You're going to have weeks. Buffalo is going to have a week, even though explosive as they've looked. They're going to have a week where it's not going to go good. You know, Miami, same thing. You see some of these teams that everybody's putting on a pedestal, and it's like they're going to have a week where it doesn't go right. And in this league, it's about how you respond to things. And I think the biggest thing the Rams can walk away from that game is the way they responded.
Let me ask you about the running backs, because they went back and forth there. Darrell Henderson, it looked like he was maybe going to be the guy this year in week one. And then Cam Akers came back and was much more a part of the run game this week. Are there pros and cons as to having like multiple guys out there during a game? I would imagine from an offensive line standpoint, blocking for different guys is different. And with a younger or less experienced offensive line, that might present some challenges. How do you see that?
Yeah, I think they are kind of different. You look at it, I think Darrell Henderson's a guy who's kind of what I always say is the guy that hits the holes really fast. I mean, he's always just quick. When he gets the football, he kind of picks his target line and he rolls. And Cam Akers is more what I would say similar to a Le'Veon Bell as far as his style. He's very slow and methodical how he runs the ball. He kind of picks his spots and picks his gaps and tries to set things up a little bit for himself. I think it's more, it's going to be different to the O-line because they're going to feel the tempo is different as they're blocking sometimes of when they need to get on a block. But I don't think it necessarily is good or bad in any way. I think sometimes it can just be more making sure the O-line, the running backs kind of get hot and they get a good feel for how each other, you know, really play the game. And you look at both those guys, Cam Akers and Darrell Henderson, probably too, some of the problem there is just their lack of being available. I mean, in this game, in the NFL, availability is everything. And they've both been hurt. They've both had opportunities where they weren't in there a lot over the last couple of years. So, it's about, can we get them consistently healthy and have the opportunity where they're on the field with us and having an opportunity that you can build that you know, that tempo, that consistency, that confidence in each other. Because a running game, you look at the great running teams, it's all built on confidence and a belief in each other that these plays can work. But when you're not on the field together, it's hard to have that confidence.
Who's a running back out there that you haven't had a chance to block for that you're like, man, I would have loved to be in front of that guy?
Well, that's an easy one right now. Nick Chubb. I mean, goodness gracious, that guy's, that'd have been a lot of fun. I mean, when I got in the league, I played with Rudy Johnson, you know, and then I got a chance to play with Cedric Benson, who was an awesome runner. And I mean, those kind of guys that finish like that, the way he finishes plays and runs, that is a lot. If you like to get into that kind of game and getting dirty and getting on the ground and knocking people around, it's a lot of fun to play with a guy like him. So I'm sure that O-line enjoys the opportunity to play for Nick Chubb.
He's a funny one, not a funny one, but like, because he's obviously one of the best running backs in the NFL, but we've gone to a space where so many people play fantasy football. And I think evaluate the running backs that way. Like the best running backs are the ones that will get you those PPR points because that's the format that people are playing. He's not a guy that they throw to a bunch. So I think he kind of goes a little bit under the radar because people think that the best running backs are the ones that pop for them every single week in fantasy. And he certainly did that this past week with like 30 plus fantasy points, but it's not going to happen every week to that degree because he's not catching the ball out of the backfield. So I think it's interesting that you mentioned him.
Yeah, I think so. You really look at it. I mean, a lot of the backs across the league, you know, if it's Alvin Kamara, some of these other guys, it's like you almost feel like you're just watching while you're blocking because it's like, I can't help this guy. He's so fast. He's so twitchy. All I can really do is get him started and then I'm a no part of it. Right. I mean, Nick Chubb kind of just for whatever reason, it always seems to be those gritty, tough runs where, you know, as an O lineman, I think you feel more involved because you feel like you're pushing the pile with him or in those blocks with him as he's just getting all those gritty yards. But, you know, a Saquon or Kamara, all these guys, they just make people look silly. And I think I look at it like, you know, probably what it was blocking for Barry Sanders and some of those guys back in the day. It's just like you're blocking, but really you're watching because you can't keep up with them. And they're so special out in space, getting the ball out there that you're probably enjoying. Hey, I get to go get Gatorade a little faster because they're going to have some explosive runs and touchdowns. But I don't know if I necessarily feel like I'm a big part of it all the time.
Yeah. You got the Browns game this week on Thursday Night Football. So you'll be there for that game against the Steelers. They love that 13 personnel grouping. What does that tell us about what they think about, you know, how their offense should run and what their strengths and weaknesses are?
I think you really look at it, you know, certain teams, I think it's about finding what their personnel fits best and what do we want to do? I think when you look at them, they want to run the football. They want to have the opportunity to play, you know, play action passes off the running game, getting some of the tight ends out in space. You know, different teams have done it really successfully over the past. Obviously, you know, I mean, New England did it for years and did it really well. And I think Rob Gronkowski obviously makes it a lot easier to make that decision. But when you've got big physical tight ends, you've got the opportunity to get on the field and do that. It's the difference in probably you look at the Miami Dolphins who are going to say, hey, our speed's going to beat you. You're thinking that what we're going to do is put enough tight ends on the field where we think our tight ends are going to beat your linebackers. We think that they're bigger, faster, stronger. They're going to make tough catches. And we're going to put you in a situation where you're going to have to put more linebackers on the field or more linemen. And either way, we're going to have tight ends that are going to beat them in space. And so you probably would say that means that they might have one guy they think is really their speed guy at receiver, but they don't have enough to think they can always take the top off of a defense. So they're going to play in 13 a lot to keep it physical, to keep you, you know, sucking up, bringing those safeties up to the line of scrimmage to try and make tough tackles. And then next thing you know, we're dumping it to a tight end over your head or creating some three-level throw with them where you don't have somebody in one of the levels and we're going to, you know, we're really going to expose you in that opportunity.
On the other side of the ball in that matchup, Browns pass rush, I saw Brandon Thorne, who I know you know as a O-line D-line analyst, says it's pretty much been like Myles Garrett being like off the charts good and everybody else being kind of meh. So if you are an offensive line that is going about, you know, attempting to face them, what does that mean to you?
I think, you know, they'll obviously have special attention to him. I mean, you look at the offense now in the NFL, they're going to have to do things to either chip him, put tight ends on the ball to hit him off the line of scrimmage. He does such a great job. You know, there's not many really tall rushers that are long and tall like he is that can get off the ball the way he does. Like, you know, when I'd go into a game as a left tackle facing great players, I mean, the first thing that you really check off the box is what is their ability to get off the line of scrimmage? Because that kind of changes the whole down. You know, I always had a lot of success in my division with two tremendous football players in Terrell Suggs and James Harrison. But the real reason that I fit with them so well is their game was more about leverage and power and being able to get off of blockers. These guys couldn't sustain. For me, it was that neither one of them had great get off. So I had the opportunity to be in good leverage with them and get my hands on them. And that was what I loved to do. I loved a guy who wanted to wrestle. So that's great, you know, for me. But always, like, if I played a Dwight Freeney or an Elvis Dumervil or John Abraham, who were tremendous at getting off the football, that was always something I was more concerned about. And with Myles Garrett, to be as big as he is and as powerful as he is, his ability to get off the football is what really makes tackles have a lot of stress. And so you're going to have to do things to hit him, chip him, and give opportunities for that young offensive line, you know, to be in front of him. Because let's face it, they're not doing very well in the passing game. They're trying to find ways to get that passing game going. You're going to have to stop Myles Garrett or you're going to have no shot.
Trubisky said today that he doesn't have the freedom to audible on every play, that they're still figuring out when it's a good time to do that. Have you been around a lot of quarterbacks who don't have that freedom at the line?
I haven't, but I also would say that it kind of, you know, mind-boggling to think that maybe you're calling plays that don't have audibles to them. Because in the NFL today, I mean, you have to have an answer for there's certain plays and certain looks where defenses do things, whether it be saw blitzes, whether it be zeros, that you have to have a different play than the one you've called just because flat out, just scheme wise, it won't work. I mean, there's a lot of plays you can get into protection wise and everything else that the only mechanism a quarterback has to protect himself or to protect his offense to eliminate negative plays is to audible out. And it doesn't necessarily mean, I think sometimes think that it's like, oh, you're getting into the perfect play. No, I mean, sometimes there's just plays that you need to be able to auto in to say, hey, let's not have a negative play here. Let's go with the play that's at least going to be productive for our offense. Maybe we only get a yard or two, maybe it's three, but it won't be a negative play. And because right now, if we snap this football, this is a negative play. And so I think eliminating that, you really look at the offenses that are really good. They're really good at not having any negative plays. And it kind of, you know, blows my mind a little bit that there's not actual opportunities for him to get out of bad plays if that's the case.
I'll be watching the quotes coming out of Pittsburgh for the next few days to see if there's like a clarification that follows that up, because that felt very notably like, what are we talking about there?
That doesn't seem like it makes sense. So I'm sure there was a miscommunication there probably. Maybe a certain play he doesn't have an opportunity to get out of.
Okay, Bengals offensive line, I need to talk to you about, because I thought like, hey, they went out and fixed the problem, right? Like they spent so many of their offseason resources on bringing in guys. So to a degree, and maybe this is, you know, I think a lot of us are not great evaluators of O-line talent. And those of us who have never played in the trenches, I was like, they say they're the right people. They're probably the right people. They paid a lot of money. It's not looking like it's working so far. I mean, Joe Burrow is underdressed. Mark Dominic came on this podcast on Monday and was like, he's going to get hurt. They got to dumb down the playbook. Like they just got to, you know, limit the things that they're trying to do. And to me, I'm like, how are we here with all of this offensive talent? I found his analysis of the situation highly concerning, even more so than what I was thinking was going on. How do you see it there with what you've seen from the Bengals offensive line and what you think the best path forward is to have a little bit more success?
Yeah, I think it's a mixture of things. I mean, you look at it probably in the Pittsburgh game. I think there's some opportunities there where Joe's kind of holding it a little bit, trying to do some of the things he did last year at the end. There's definitely some downs where it's like, hey, protection needs to be better. I thought in the Pittsburgh game, the protection wasn't as bad as really this past week. But it was more of, hey, you know what? We're getting into empty a lot. We're doing a lot of these things where we're going to spread teams out and say our quarterback's really good and our skill set is unbelievable. So you're going to have to cover these guys quickly and we're going to maybe expose you. And I think you saw that and it's like, all right, but we're starting to get pressure. So what's our adjustment? You know, we're getting a little too much heat on the quarterbacks, it's getting hit too much. We turn the ball over. I really thought that they may would come out this week against Dallas and simplify things a little bit and say, hey, all right, let's get it. Like do exactly what the Rams just did. Rams had a similar situation. Yeah, there wasn't a bunch of sacks and it wasn't as bad, nowhere even close to what the Cincinnati situation was, but they adjusted. They said, hey, let's do some things. We had a young O-line, some guys in new positions. Let's adjust and put them in better situations and control the tempo a little bit ourselves. And I kind of thought you'd see that in the Dallas game. I was shocked to see, I mean, that group at rushing is tremendous. I mean, they've been really good, but Dan Quinn has done an unbelievable job of really, hey, let's take little things from other teams and rush packages that other teams use and create these twists, these picks, you know, creating six man up, you know, you got to figure out who's coming, who's rushing, all this type of stuff. I think they did a tremendous package. So
plus you're already just starting with Micah Parsons.
Yeah. I mean, like, and Micah Parsons, I'll tell you, like I told somebody this, you know, I've faced obviously a ton of rushers in my career, right? 250 games playing in the NFL, 17,000 snaps. I've played some guys, right? I mean, you name it, from every era. I played in three different decades. I faced Micah Parsons in one snap when we played against each other last year in training camp. And he didn't win the rep or anything, but like I literally immediately told him, I said, man, you're gonna be real special. And he was just like, you know, I kind of gave him like a little tidbit. I said, hey, one thing I'd tell you when you do this certain move, like I kind of see that you were gonna do it. And so afterwards we kind of visited and he was like, how do you know I'm gonna be special? Like we just kind of were talking about that. And it's just you can feel the way a guy, look at it like a receiver knows how to separate. You can just feel when a guy rushes, this guy knows how to rush. Like he knows how to get off of you or get leverage and kind of change the math on you a little bit of where you've like, hey, you think you're going to run him around or you think you're going to get on top of him. He has a perfect answer. Like the one thing you're like, well, as long as they don't do this, I'll be okay. He feels that ability to be able to do that, which is what really sets him apart. Is that he's a feel rusher. He doesn't have a plan to move. He feels what he's doing. But yeah, their packages are so good. I was shocked to see Cincinnati go in there and say, hey, we're going to line up like this again.
Yeah.
And try and throw the football. I mean, I just, you know, it's like you can blame Joe Burrow. You can blame the offensive line. I love Zach Taylor. I've got a ton of respect for him. But I was shocked offensively that that was their mentality. Like, I just thought they did nothing to say, hey, let's help the O-line here.
Right.
They're new together. Like, I don't care how good you are. When you're first, like our first year of all being together, being in the same huddle together, like there's just, we got to get a feel for one another, passing games. Having like, hey, I don't know how deep you set on certain routes, certain protections. Right. There's just such a thing to get a feel for one another that kind of shocks me that their mentality was to come out and just spread it out all the time this early in the year.
Right. There are all these long developing routes like that might not work in this situation. So is the pivot there? Cause you still want to be able to have stuff in there that takes advantage of your wide receiver speed and ability to set. Like, is it just like having an outlet, like having a, you know, if it all breaks down, then like Mixon's there or Hayden Hurst is there or like what, how, what is answer?
The Miami Dolphins have looked pretty good throwing the football out of 21 and 12 personnel. I mean, I people say it can't be done. It's, you know, I laugh. I mean, Sean and I used to have these conversations all the time. I mean, I'm a guy, I love 12. I love 21. I love the opportunity to get more guys on the field where teams have to worry about the running game and then figure out ways to throw it from there, from play actions to boots to everything else. I just think you can create three-level throws and opportunities to move the quarterback. That, you know, you're not sitting there every single down. I mean, the one thing people don't understand now in this day and age, like I always say this to even the older tackles, it's like in 06, when I played, you were in the I formation or some kind of split back and the quarterback never even hardly got in the gun unless it was third and long. Now these guys want to come out and set the quarterback in one spot down in and down out. Like rushers can literally just pin their ears back and he's going to be standing at 8 yards and I'm just going to take off and do whatever it takes to get the 8 yards. I mean, it's unbelievable sometimes to me, the arrogance of just, hey, why don't we help the lineman out a little bit and not give the same exact look where they know exactly where the quarterback's going to be standing every single play. And so I just, you know, you look at it, it gets done. I mean, you know, a lot of explosive teams that throw the football at 12, 21, out of the I formations, wing sets. I mean, you name it. So I think there's ways to do it. You just got to be willing to say, hey, put my ego down a little bit. You know what? This is what's best for our team to be play offense. And that's always the conversation Sean and I would have is what is the best thing for us to be successful? And I think really good teams don't go out and say, how do we win this game? They say, how does this team beat us? The only way this team can beat us is if we let them get pressure on the quarterback. The only way this team can beat us if they sack us 7 times in a game. Like if we eliminate that, this team can't beat us. And the really good teams realize that and play and style their game that way.
So I'm thinking of the Bears as you say that, because it seemed very apparent that they understand that their strength is an offensive line. And therefore then maybe as an offense is run blocking. And so they ran the ball like crazy. I know part of that was probably matchup related and what the Packers' weakness was thought to be, but the fact that they only threw the ball 11 times and maybe struggle a little bit on pass pro Is that something that you think we're going to continue to see, is them coming out? Because it also feels easy to defend at a certain point, right? Like, you're not going to send Justin Fields out there and throw the ball 11 times and have much success in the NFL. I'm curious about what you see with their offensive line in terms of what their strengths and weaknesses are and how they can make it work so that Justin Fields could potentially be used more in a way that, like, we see Jalen Hurts being used in Philadelphia. It feels like they're not ready to do that yet, and that might be linked to the offensive line.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you look at, I guess, some young guys playing on the edge there, that, you know, it's an offensive line that you'd say, all right, what are we really skill set wise? You know, if you're going to drop back and throw it a lot, who are the guys that we would sit back there for a long time and think that we're going to win? You know, it's a much different situation when you're talking about Cincinnati and you got the skill receivers that they have. I mean, that can destroy people. So it's like, you know, it's obviously we want to try to throw it. I don't blame Zach Taylor and the Cincinnati Bengals for wanting to throw the football at all. It's more of what you have, right? And so I think for Chicago, it's about, we have a young quarterback who has shown a lot of wow ability. Like, I mean, you really look at last year's tape, you know, if you'd say there's a category, he was really up there and probably the top end, as maybe as one of the rookies, is the wow plays. Like, I mean, guys got some special football ability in him. But how do we make sure that we don't put him in enough situations where we take away his ability to get better at the other things and we protect him a little bit so he can grow? You know, a lot what the 49ers would have done with Trey Lance, unfortunately, him getting hurt, is we're going to give him chances to just kind of grow game by game. And you're not going to see a ton of aggressiveness from like the quarterback position. We're going to try to put you in really good situations to grow gradually. And I think that's important. I mean, some of these quarterbacks get beat up. They get, you know, hit too much. They get in situations where they don't have the skill set that they need to be successful. And it ruins them from a mindset standpoint. They start seeing ghosts. They start guessing they're going to get hit. They start leaving the pocket too soon. All those type things. I mean, you look at Lamar. I mean, look at what really Baltimore started with him. I mean, what that offense was when he first started, and everybody's like, oh, it's because he can't throw it or whatever. Or how about they did exactly what you should do with a young quarterback who is learning the game and also has awesome skill set to run the football as well. So we gradually brought him along, and now he looks better and better every time he gets on the football field. And so I think it's more just it's a smart mentality to limit him. But obviously, I think they want him to throw the football more. I think they just think that at some point they got to run the football really well to give him chances to not always have to be sitting back there with the football trying to make plays.
Are there any teams out there that jump out at you as teams that are not putting their players in the best position?
I don't know anybody so far jumps out. I do think, you know, the Cincinnati one obviously sticks out to me the most.
Yeah.
I mean, I think just because what you have, I mean, Ja'Marr Chase is so special. You could line up in 13 personnel and just throw him the ball if you wanted to every play, right? Now obviously they have other skill guys they want to get on the field. But you look at his ability to just always win. I mean, you could argue, wouldn't we just put every single person we can in protection and he might could beat three people, because he did it at times last year, right? So it's just one of those things. To me, they stuck out as a team that I was like a little shocked, just because I know how intelligent Zach Taylor is and how special those guys are over there. He got a ton of respect for him. And obviously, I think Joe Burrow, you know, LSU brother, he's the man. And I think the world of him. I just, you know, it shocks me that they didn't think, hey, you know what, we probably need to help these guys a little bit earlier, more in the season.
How about your other LSU brother, OBJ, just sitting pretty to a degree? Like, hey, who needs me when I'm healthy? Because he's a bunch of teams flirting that would raise their hands. Yes, he is.
He's out showing up everywhere. Like, he is. You know, he's everywhere, hugging quarterbacks on sidelines and everything else. You know, you got to give him credit. Odell knows what he's doing, right? I mean, he's I love him to death. And we've had some special moments together. And always had a ton of respect for each other. And so he's a good friend. But you know what? I know exactly what he's doing. He's out there giving hugs. You know, he's probably sitting with the quarterback's wives during the game. You never know. I mean, he's out there just making sure he's got all the leverage possible. He's a smart man.
Where do you think? Where would be like the ideal landing spot for him if you were his agent and you wanted him to go to the best, you know? Like he ended up in a great spot last year, right? Like that worked out well for him. Like the injury obviously put him in a position where he couldn't capitalize on it in that sense. But
yeah, I mean, you think about it, he doesn't get injured in the Super Bowl. He's probably getting a massive contract and had a great ending with us. And, you know, one thing I'll say that is not going to be an issue this time, which is going to be better for him, is I thought really the ability he had last year to come into the Rams offense, know it, play early, understand it, have so many people brag about his ability to pick it up really fast. And, you know, we all were so impressed with that, that I think this year he's going to have even more suitors just from the fact of just that one team that might say, hey, you know, I don't know about his ability to pick this up that fast and join us this late. He's eliminated that concern. So there's going to be more teams involved. And I don't know if we know the team right now. I mean, you look at it, could it be in Buffalo if they have an injury here or there at the receiver position? You know, I think he's going to definitely get with a team that's a contender. And so I think that's why he's out there talking to Tom. He's out there talking, you know, to everybody else. You see him and Vaughn on social media all the time about Buffalo. I think, he's a smart man. Like I said, I joke around about it, but he really is. He knows that this game is about, you know, being in good situations and taking advantage of those opportunities. And so I think it's an advantage. I mean, if I wanted to still play right now, that's how I would be. I mean, if you're not on a team, hey, what's the best team and the best situation I could join? Because other than that, it's really not worth my time. And so I think that that's his mindset, is that he'll wait it out. And come November, when he's probably cleared and healthy, would be my guess around his timeline, he'll make that decision.
Okay. Let me come back at you with that then. So I know that that's, you know, potentially off the table for you, but if this was you, let's say outside Buffalo, and I'm going to take the Rams off the table, because I know that they're also a good team and you have relationships. That's an obvious one. Who would be that team this year that you would point out and say, like, and I don't want to limit it to a team that needs a left tackle. So actually what I'm really asking you here is, like, who's the contender? Who's the team that jumps out at you the most outside of those two?
Well, I mean, I really think, you know, Philadelphia, obviously, you saw is really special. I think that'd be a fun one. That's a fun offense to play in. I mean, you know, with a quarterback who can move like he can and throw, and they do a lot of that same thing I just talked about. Some of those play actions out of 12 and 13 and moving him around. And I think their ability to do things with him at the quarterback position and what he's shown early, they're definitely a contender. And then defensively, the way they play and have always played with some of the leadership they have on that side of the football, they're going to be a really, really good team this season. I would say Philly to me in the NFC is the one team that I would be, you know, all right, that's a team I'd love to go play for. I love Kevin O'Connell. I think they'd probably be my second team, the Vikings in the NFC, just because I just enjoy him.
What happened on Monday night?
Yeah. You know what?
I didn't see that.
To be honest with you, I think that Philadelphia team is really good. I mean, I really do. I think that a lot of people are all over Buffalo. But I think that Philly team's a lot closer to them than people think. And I wouldn't be shocked if they could pull it off, because you really look at it, they're built for the Buffalo Bills. I mean, both their tackles are tremendous players. And so they'd be able to stop Von Miller. They'd be able to slow him down. Lane Johnson has been one of the best there is in the business for a long time. And so I think that offensive line would be built to block the Buffalo Bills. And then you add a quarterback who can move around just like Josh Allen can. He can do all those things. And they've got the corners that could lock down Stephon Diggs. So, I mean, you look at what he did last night to Justin Jefferson. Darius Slay has shown that, hey, you know what? They match up well. I mean, if you really look at it, they match up really, really well with Buffalo. And they can run the football and everything else. So they'd be able to keep the ball out of Josh Allen's hands. So I think they're a really good football team. I think they're really special. I think Minnesota is – look at it. They're game two into a new regime. I mean, I know everyone was excited about them, but they got a lot of time to play together. It's no different than Cincinnati Bengals and what we talked about with that offensive line. This team is new regime, new players. There's some new guys in there in different places, new offense, new defense. I mean, they need time. Will they be really good? I think they're going to be really good, but they're going to need some time. And then moving to the AFC, to me, it's the Chargers. I love the Chargers. They're one of my picks. I think that they did exactly what they needed to do to fix themselves over the offseason. Mm-hmm. And I think they're ready to contend. I think they're going to be a team. If they're healthy, they're going to only get better. And kind of what I said, there's a lot of teams on pedestals right now. But that team, when you're built with two edge rushers that are special, those guys are, you got the secondary that can play the way they can, and you got the top five offense. As they get better and play together, they could be really special as a football team this year. And so they'd be my pick in the AFC for sure, for if I was going to go anywhere.
And I would imagine you've loved the way that they have built that team through the draft. Those O-line picks, just like knocking them out of the park.
They have. And even an older one in Trey Pipkins a couple of years ago, who, you know, he's come in and he's played well. I mean, for a right tackle that you don't see a lot of guys get in there, get a chance, don't do very well, get removed, and then to come in and play pretty good. I mean, people forget he's faced, you know, Max Crosby. and then a Chiefs group that gets after it on the road in his first two games, you know, and he got a little banged up, but they think he's going to be back. So that's good. And then that young guard, Zion Johnson, wow, he is a special football player. So, you know, and, you know, I couldn't have more respect for Slater. I mean, me and him got a good chance to visit before their game. It was fun. He ran over and gave me a hug, and he's going to be a really, really special left tackle for a long time. That guy moves really well. He was actually my pick in the draft. I picked him over Sewell, even though that got a little bit of controversy there. But I thought Sewell was really explosive and had a lot of wow plays. But for offensive line, especially for tackle, I love to see guys that look like they're smoking cigarettes while they're playing football.
It means that
it means like that when you watch a guy pass protect, if you're like, wow, it looks like he's applying no effort and he just blocks people, to me, that means that they're calm, they're confident, they're in the ground, and they're just moving smoothly. And they're not overreacting and jumping around the moves that block people. They're just under control. And when you're under control as a lineman, you go watch rushers who are beating people, watch the actual lineman trying to block them and see whether their feet are ever in the ground or if they feel like they're always panicking or they're always falling down. Guys who are smooth and moving and in their feet and their balance and their heads in between their feet, not out over their body, over their toes or leaning backwards. They're just under themselves. He moves that way so simply. And it just looks like you could just see him out there puffing a cigarette while he's blocking people. That to me is like, those are tackles. Those guys that can move and glide like that. And he's been able to do that since college.
Help me put someone else on our radar. That is not from an offensive line standpoint. These guys don't get nearly enough love. Who's crushing it that people are not talking about enough?
Man, you know, I think there's some good ones. I think two of them that I think it really has to do with being in Los Angeles is those two guys. I mean, those would be my picks if you asked me again, because Slater is unbelievable. I mean, he really is. And he had a lot of honors as a rookie, but I still don't think people talk about him enough as he should. I mean, you look at his first 2 weeks, I mean, really facing Chandler Jones, you know, in 1 week, and then the opportunity to go play in Kansas City, you know, and face another great rusher. It's literally like you wouldn't even know he played in the games, you know? And to me, that's the greatest compliment that you can give an offensive lineman, is that you'd never know he played.
But you're not talking about them.
No. And then look at what Zion Johnson, I mean, Chris Jones moves midway through the game and says, I'm not playing on that kid's side anymore, because he's over there just getting it done. I mean, I thought it was as impressive as I've seen a young player like that, especially a young guard. I mean, guard's tough to play in the league today. I mean, he looks great. And then he is moving people in the run game. And I actually had breakfast with Brandon Staley that morning before the game. And we had a little coffee together. And, you know, he was telling me, he's like, this kid's like a size 18 shoe, just freaking big feet, grounded in the ground. Just, you know, you'd love this guy. So getting to see him play in person was a lot of fun. He hyped it up for me, and man, he's the real deal.
Okay. I got to ask about Brandon Staley then. I keep wanting to be like, okay, one more question, then let him go, Lindsay. Brandon Staley earned a reputation last year for being somewhat aggressive in, you know, in terms of game management situations, went for it on fourth down a number of times that actually led to wins. We don't talk about those enough. We talk about the times when it didn't work, and then maybe that's all we have to talk about for a week. As a player on a team, and I realize it's different situation. Like if you're on a very good team, like the Rams, you know, for the last few years, you're on a team that doesn't need to take a lot of those chances. I feel like you look around the league, you look at like the Lions, and they did that a lot last year, and I loved it. I see Daboll doing that with the Giants. I feel like when you're building a team, that can have such an effect on the culture that you're trying to create, you know, creating those extra chances and just saying like, go get it. What is that like for a team or a player on that kind of a team? Am I onto something there, or am I making too much of that? Like, when you're on a team with a coach who is aggressive in those situations, do you love that as a player, or is it specifically situational?
I think it's situational, but you love it in that season and where they were as a football team in that circumstance, really, I think they enjoyed it and they loved it. I think that was one of the coolest things that Brandon Staley was able to do this offseason. You know, he's already received criticism this year for not being as aggressive in those situations. Right. Which I think is
so funny.
I see
the analytics community going, we lost him.
Yeah. And so it's like everyone's upset, right? And look at the Nathaniel Hackett situation. At the end of the day, if he goes for it, you know, what's the criticism there? And what are people saying then in that situation? Probably not much. But Brandon Staley, it's like, all right, I've gone for it for a year. You guys criticize me. Now I don't. I make good decisions, what I think are sound decisions. And it's still a criticism. So I think it's really important to really listen to what he said. And in last year, he said in the offseason, he said, you know, the only thing that I regret from the season is when we played the Raiders at the end of the season, I didn't have us in a better situation to stop some of those runs at the end of the game and could have forced a tie. He goes, I do not regret being aggressive. I don't regret going for it. Because to him, and I think this is really cool, people talk about tanking. They talk about preparing for the next year, all these things. He wasn't tanking or saying, hey, we don't want to win these games, or we're going to just be aggressive because we're not good enough. In his mind, he talked about this offseason. It was about creating a mindset where my players want to be in that situation. Like, you want, in the biggest moment of any game, to have a chance to win the game. Yes. And the reason I agree with him, and I can understand it, is we went for it in Seattle on 4th and inches on like our own 30-yard line, my probably second or third year there. And we had a quarterback sneak, got it. And you would have thought we'd won the Super Bowl in that moment. How jacked everybody was to close the game out in this, like, wow, they're going to go for it right here. If the Seahawks get a field goal with Russell Wilson, they got a chance to win the game, and they go for it on 4th and 1 on their own 30 and get it. I mean, it's one of those things that, like, the bond, the excitement,
yes,
all of that, it just creates exactly what we've talked about when it comes to culture of believing in one another, having confidence in one another to get the job done. And I think to him, that's more what the season was about. How do I keep getting these guys to believe in one another? And especially my young quarterback, how do I get him to have a desire to want the football in his hand at all times? I know he wants it now on 3rd down, 2nd down, 1st down, but I want him to want it on every down and never the ball's out of his hand. And so I think he did that. I mean, you hear their demeanor, their attitude. And now this year he's making some more conservative choices, but I think in time we'll see some of that come out again and he'll be aggressive again.
Andrew, really appreciate your time. Have fun on Thursday night.
Hey, appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Good stuff. And you can watch Andrew on Thursdays on Amazon Prime. You can also follow him on Twitter at Andrew Whitworth. Kind of sounded a little bit like a coach to me, don't you think? Like, a lot of stories of him huddling up with coaches, talking strategy. I think it's interesting that he didn't go in that post-playing career direction, but, you know, that's a tough gig. So I certainly understand wanting to do broadcasting instead. I really think there is a great opportunity for him to do some very good work in that area, by the way. So I'm going to be interested to see how Amazon uses him moving forward. Other things that I am interested in this week, the outstanding slate of games. So we've got 9 in the early window, we've got 4 in the afternoon, and we've got a good mix of matchups. I already mentioned Bills-Dolphins, which I think is going to be phenomenal in the early window. That's huge in particular for Miami. I'm also interested in the Lions-Vikings game. So you know how the Bills have scored 72 points through 2 games, most in the NFL. Do you know who scored 1 fewer point than that? Detroit, tied with Kansas City for 2nd in scoring offense so far with 71 points through 2 games. And yes, I know the defenses are going to get much harder for Detroit. I'm just saying. And by the way, it looks like Vegas thinks that they are going to continue to put up points this week. The point total in that game, the 2nd highest of the week, 53.5. They've got the Vikings favored by 5.5. I don't hate that bet for the Lions. Another good game this week. How about the Jags versus the Chargers? Jacksonville sitting alone in 1st in the AFC South, maybe coming together a little bit faster than some people expected. They were a surprise number 2 on Football Outsiders' overall DVOA list this week. That means, by the way, DVOA, defense adjusted value over average, which means they're looking at every play and comparing a team's success rate to what the rest of the league does on those kinds of plays in that kind of down and score situation. It also factors in the quality of opponent. So obviously the fact that it's very early is massive there. It's a small sample size, but I do think that it's notable that Jacksonville of all teams is finding itself so high on that list. And we'll see how this week's game affects that. Jags Chargers in the afternoon window in Los Angeles. Rams Cardinals also in that window. So is the Battle of the Bays. Packers Bucks. So as a whole, I think the slate is better than last week's slate. I didn't think there were a ton of matchups last week that got me real fired up heading into the week. Obviously, there are always a handful that turn out to be barn burners and very entertaining. But, you know, when I looked at the matchups last week, I wasn't like, that one, I can't wait to watch. This week, there are a bunch of games like that. And I'll be back on Friday with my thoughts on the week from a fantasy perspective. In the meantime, though, if you enjoyed this episode, I would greatly appreciate it if you would take a couple of seconds to rate, review, and subscribe to the show. As always, I'd love to hear your feedback. Also, I'm Lindsay underscore Rhodes on Twitter, Lindsay Rhodes NFL on Instagram. The NFL Road Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network, and the producer is Andrew Emmer. I hope you have a wonderful rest of the week, and I will see you back here again on Friday. Help with those lineups.
SiriusXM Podcasts.